This is What's It Like with Dr. Ken Tangen.
Hi, I'm Ken Tangen. This is episode 96 of What's It Like. My guest is Aaron Wall. Somewhere in California?
Yes, Oakland.
Oakland? Don't all the techies live in San Francisco?
Yeah, but I guess SEO is as much marketing as tech. So
I see. So you moved across the bay.
Yeah, well, you can always go into the city if you want, but we might eventually move there. So,
did you grow up in that area?
No, I was born in Illinois and then was in the military. And then actually my wife was one of my customers and she lived out here. And yeah, after like we met for a while, I flew out and then she flew over there and then we... I ended up moving out here.
Hmm. What part of Illinois were you in?
The corn part. The middle.
Out in the fields.
Yeah. So, it's called Forest with two R's. It's like 1,200 people.
Wow. Came from a small town.
Yep.
Did you come from a large family?
Like four siblings. Mm-hmm. So not too big. They were all older, though, like 5-6 years older or so.
Oh.
So there's a bit of an age gap.
When you were growing up, who had the biggest influence on your life?
My mom, probably.
Mm-hmm.
So, yep.
Do you know how your parents met?
No.
What was your major challenge as a child?
Not sure that I had too many major challenges. I did lots of watching, like, cartoons and stuff. Had a paper route, like, always did odd job stuff, like mowing the yards and stuff. Also, a friend of mine collected baseball cards and got me into that. And that's where, actually, I learned a lot of marketing stuff. As I got a bit older, like, in high school, I sold baseball cards, too, at, like, flea markets and card shows and stuff.
Did you ever have your own store?
No, not a full-on store. When I was 17, I joined the military. So
I took care of that, huh?
The thing is, it was towards the tail end of, like, kind of the bubble, mm-hmm. You know? Like, there was the marketing story behind that was like, oh, this 52 Tops Mickey Mantle, when your card gets 30 years older, it'll be the same. And no, it won't, you know?
Never quite the same, huh? Yep. What was school like for you?
Pretty good, but maybe a little boring. I was kind of like, a bit of an outlier, maybe, mm-hmm. I would say. Kind of, not like fully immersed, I guess. And sometimes I would like go ahead and do like the homework before we were supposed to and stuff like that. So, I always liked math though.
Mm. And after you graduated high school, what did you do?
Like 2 weeks later, I joined the military.
Which branch did you choose?
The Navy.
And there doesn't seem like there's a lot of water in Indiana. Why the Navy?
Well, my mom thought that was the safest one.
So. They might shoot at you, but at least you're surrounded by sea.
Yeah, a lot of water.
And what was it like in the military?
I think I not so good of a fit for me. I think it's good for some people, but it didn't fit my personality well. Like, I like trying to, like, learn new things and figure stuff out. And sometimes I put myself in routines that are pretty bland. But if you have a bland routine that's sometimes self-imposed, it doesn't feel so bad. But if it's imposed by someone else, and then there's stuff you do that doesn't make a lot of sense, then it's not so good. As an example of, like, a couple examples of absurdity that stick out of my mind are, so, like, when you're putting food, like, on the food line, there'd be, like, hot stuff at one end, cold stuff at the other, or that's how you do it if you're smart. But then we'd do stuff like, you know, hot, cold, or, you know, hot item, iced item, hot item. And then people are like, well, why is that ice melting? Why isn't this other stuff warm? And it's like, well, you know. And another good one was like, like, there's deck plates you walk through in the engine room. And there's supports for it. And so it would look better and get repainted, we had to take it out of the boat. This wasn't to like structurally improve it. It actually made it structurally worse. But the thing is, it wouldn't fit out. So we had to use hacksaws to hack it up by hand. So then it had fresh painting, but it, you know, had less structural integrity. So is that, that's a kind of perfect.
But it looked good.
Yeah. Yep.
You have to have your priorities when you're military.
Yeah. Well, yeah, one time I went on a cleaning day, and I went down where it was really dark, where you wouldn't think a person my size would even fit. And my uniform got so dirty just from being down there that they actually, like, announced, like, what a good job I'd done with nobility to even know, because they couldn't even see down where I was. It was so dirty down there.
I thought they cleaned everything.
Well, that's the goal, right? I see. But there's a lot of stuff crammed into, like, the engine room. You know, like, a submarine, you'll have, like, a nuclear power plant and all this other stuff on it. So it's a lot of stuff in a small space.
Yeah, that's true. Did you enjoy it enough to re-up?
No, not at all. No. Nah. Yeah, I didn't fit so well there. So
what did you do afterward?
When I got out, I liked web stuff. I actually, even when I was in the military, I bought some of the, you know, idiotic bubble mentality. I bought some of the internet stocks too, even though I didn't make very much money. You know, had to make sure I could get roped into the internet stock bubble. But I had stocks for like DoubleClick and Ink2Me, which are DoubleClick is like ads, and then Ink2Me was like search. But Google obviously eventually ate everybody's lunch on both of those, and they eventually acquired DoubleClick. But from watching the web stuff and the web bubble, I think that was like a shiny lure for me. And then when I got out of the military, I tried learning a lot of the web stuff. I had another job as a middle-level manager for 8 months, I think it was. I think after 5 months, I told them, hey, I'll do this for about 3 more months, but I'm probably just going to do my own stuff on the web. And then that's what I did. So
what exactly do you do?
So the variety of things, like we have like affiliate sites or sites that have contextual ads, or sometimes we've had stuff selling direct ads, and then we run like a membership website. And we've done consulting where we help other people try to rank better in the search engines and stuff like that.
So is it all based on SEO or in a variety of things?
Mostly. Yeah, I mean, it's a variety of things, like trying to build a community, you know, and stuff about blogging. Like, SEO is, it ties into a lot of other things. Like, for example, a person could be really good at public relations and be good at SEO from that. Or they could be really good at some sort of analytical bits to find areas where there's opportunities in the market and be good at SEO because of that. So it's a lot of different disciplines. There's also stuff like people buy like relevant domain names and try to rank those. Sometimes those can be good investments, sometimes bad. So it's a lot of different really pieces to it.
So SEO is search engine optimization.
Right. Yep.
If you are a famous person, then you don't really need to optimize much because everybody's coming there anyway?
To some degree, that's true. For example, so there's so we'll use like an absurd example. So if you're Kim Kardashian or whatever, a lot of people are probably searching for you already. But the stuff they're searching for might be like rumors or trashy stuff and stuff like that. So
you might want to redirect them to other things.
Right. If and then also there's other stuff, like if you want to be known as something, like people can be known for numerous things. And if you want to push one thing more or rebrand how you're seen or whatever, there could still be value in that. And then also there's like brand-oriented keywords or personal-related ones. And then there's also stuff like general category-related keywords. So, just on the celebrity front still, like the Paris Hilton has like perfume or whatever, or so many lines of perfume and this and that and these other things. There's general queries that you could try to rank for. Like, for example, I mean, she might just be licensing her name to someone that creates it, and that's as far as she goes. But she could also try to rank for perfume or something, you know?
Mm-hmm. In general, is it best to try to rank for one particular thing, to be only known for one thing?
It's a mix. So, yes, when you're new, it's good to focus on one thing, because if you say, a lot of people do this, we specialize in web design, pay-per-click, search engine optimization, Facebook, Twitter. You're like, that's not specializing.
The sun, the moon, the stars.
Yeah, so if you're trying to be known for everything, then that also means that everyone would be your competitor, and it also means that your messaging would be so watered down that people wouldn't have a reason to know you or what to say. Like, well, that guy, he's like a C-level player and everything. That's not really a way to be seen as strong. Mm-hmm. And if you look at someone like Jacob Nielsen, he's a usability expert. He'll write columns about SEO or web design or this or that, but he frames everything through the lens of usability. So, like, he'll write about search, but then he'll talk about the power of defaults and the value of being the top listing. But he's still talking about the power of defaults and understanding default settings and driving user behavior and usability. So the thing is that you can, even if you're known as being under one lens and you talk about related topics, you can still speak as the speak on where they or write and how they tangentially connect to whatever you're core known for being. The flip side of that is if you make your thing too tight, too early, it can be hard to reposition later. And as an example there, our domain name being SEO Book was originally because the site was going to sell an ebook about SEO. And that was good at the time because I had very little money and had to get exposure and so on and so forth. But now the site is more about, like, you know, online marketing, publishing, online media, all these things, and SEO. And then it isn't so much just a book, but it's more of like a community, has tools and all these other features.
So how did you reposition it? Did you find another name, or did you just change the material?
Well, over time, we just kept bolting more stuff on. So the problem is it's not perfectly positioned if you... this was, I was trying to say, is the other example is it would be better if it, so sometimes when you're, if you don't have a lot of capital off the start, you have to make these sort of firmly boxed positions, but then later on that those can have consequences. If I had to redo the site from scratch today, I would use a kind of more like a brand related phrase, something that sounded brandy and memorable that could be flexible and move from market to market. But that's a good approach after you already have attention, audience, cash flow, all these other things. But if you're starting from scratch, it's better to start off really focused until you build those sorts of... So if I was really courageous, I could rebrand it at some point and change the name. However, I don't know. I've already been doing it about a decade, so I don't know how much longer. Like, if I'm going to, you know, go another decade mm-hmm. or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I always wondered about big companies that try to rebrand themselves in terms of names. Cell phone companies where, you know, they would sell themselves and then they'd rename themselves. And it was like, I still know who you are. And the stuff still sucks, you know? So it really hasn't changed any.
You never hear them use a literal brand, though, like drop calls.
No, that would actually be very good. Yeah. What's the best thing about your job?
So the nice thing, I'd say the best bit is being able to work at home. The best and the worst is sometimes the same. So the best is the ability to work at home and switch your hours around somewhat. And that means, like, if, you know, when other people are driving into work and, like, in traffic for an hour, you're either sleeping or working or playing or something. So you save that time. So that's good. Also, the ability to switch around when you do stuff. Mm-hmm. It is also really good, so you don't have to worry about waking up to an alarm clock at a set time every day. I've always been bad at waking up. That wasn't so good in the military either.
They don't take sleeping in as an excuse.
No, actually, one time I I had like my back like hose up, like it was having spasms and stuff. I was actually laying like in like cold concrete in the parking lot. It was like so painful. And I got up and kind of like slithered my way the rest of the boat. And then they gave me some painkillers, you know, and this is at like middle of the day. And then like the next morning they're like, well, where are you? You're supposed to, and I couldn't even really walk. They were still expecting me to be there. I was like, yeah, that's not going to work. So a couple months ago I hurt one of my knees too. We saw a doctor and they kind of jerked it in all these different directions. And before that, I wasn't able to straighten. And then after they jerked it around, it was. It still hurt, but like I've been walking every day since then to try to, you know, I don't want to be broken like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also, so that's part of the flip side of the online stuff. If you work at home, is that you can be pretty isolated. Like my wife and I are here and we play and have fun, but like outside of just your core family, it's very easy to be isolated from other people. Like, you know, how people go into work, they have some evil relationships and then some happy ones or whatever. While on the computer, it's, you feel a bit distant. You don't have that sense of like face-to-face communications with coworkers or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, the probably even bigger issue than that is that if you're not vigilant about making sure you work out every day, it's really easy to just sit at the computer and kind of melt into the chair. And then you stand up like 16 hours later.
And you still can't walk.
Yeah. So, but the key there is my buddy got a Fitbit, not a paid placement, Fitbit pedometer. He recommended I get one, and then I got my wife one, my mom one, and we all use it and track like steps and stuff. And I try to get 10,000 steps a day.
So. Is there anything that has surprised you about your job?
Stuff's always changing. So I mean, you can see a lot of the trends that are going as they first emerge, but you can still, no matter how well you try to plan, you can still get caught off guard. Like some sites can get penalized or like all sorts of random stuff come up. Like people hack into WordPress sites and then some of those hacks like are re-self-generating unless you figure out and get rid of all the stuff that's wrong with it. People can do stuff like they can do credit card fraud on you to try to get like affiliate commissions. So anytime those sorts of things come up, they kind of burn you out.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, if something creates an extra 12 or 20 hours of work and you got to do it, we actually run a pretty small company. So if a lot of those crap deals come up, and dealing with a lot of those. So I know more about like stuff like MySQL and moving websites than I'd like to. But otherwise, I mean, it's if I think about having a regular job, I feel much better not. So,
what type of person would be good at your job?
People who are analytical, and so there's a couple different factors. So there's the analytical, trying to understand things, half split them. So that's like one side. You know, the ability to look at analytics data, see trends, spot that sort of stuff. That's one side of it. And then the other side, like I was mentioning about, if you were good at public relations, media relations, that sort of stuff. So most people are good at one or the other. And then that's probably enough to carry on. But very few people are going to be really good at both.
Mm-hmm.
So the tricky part is then figure out where you're the strongest and then try to have other people fill in with some of the other pieces.
If one wanted to, how would they get a job like yours?
I don't know. It's a weird like position because, I mean, anyone can start their own website, install analytics right away so you're tracking the data, and write about stuff they're interested in. But it's not a concrete thing in that stuff changes over time. Like, so some of it ends up you're managing people or resources, and some of it ends up, I mean, I guess there's like internships you can take, but the biggest thing that that really separates out the people that can do really great stuff versus those that don't is if you run some of your own websites and conduct tests, then you can know certain aspects of the algorithm better than a person that, say, is like an in-house SEO, but that's all they do is work on that one site. Because if it's harder to know, like, you learn more from failure than success. So, and you can't really afford to take certain chances if, like, this, you know, you have this one job and this one site, and you can't be certain what's going to happen. So that's the hard part about SEO, is it's a bit of a black box, and a lot of things can just kind of wash out to sea overnight. Mm-hmm. And there's certain risks you can't take if you just have one website. And but the big thing for lowering the stress is if you have a few different projects and then a bit of savings. So if things are bumpy, you kind of smooth them out because, it's an affiliate or market or whatever. Sometimes with the search results, Google can do really good, really big updates. Sometimes they're good, sometimes they're bad, sometimes they benefit you, sometimes they hurt you. And you got to have a bit of a cushion to offset that instability in the market. So there's a lot of different things with SEO. There's the person that runs their own sites, the person does consulting, the person's just an in-house for one company. But if you run your own sites, at least a few of them, you can gain a lot of insights. The tricky part is we've done consulting for a number of big companies and stuff, but I haven't been an employee in my space, so it's hard for me to say, well, this is how you get the job. You don't.
Aaron, everybody has to give themselves motivation occasionally. How do you give yourself a kick in the pants?
I don't know. Like sometimes, like if stuff doesn't go your way, like stuff falls apart, I'm pretty good at getting like kind of frustrated about that, and then like kind of using that for fuel, as a drive. But as far as when things are going well, I like this. Sometimes you can do stuff. This is another part of the big issue with SEO, is sometimes it doesn't feel like it has a lot of meaning or purpose, especially because some of it can wash away, like go out to sea. Sometimes it can do really well, better than you think, and it's not always entirely up to you how it does. I've tried to help my mom some and stuff like that, and that really kind of takes something that sometimes maybe doesn't feel like it has as much purpose as it could. And the fact that, you know, you're helping other people, like my mom and my mother-in-law, and it makes it more concrete and purposeful. Mm-hmm. So,
let me turn the question around. When you have to calm yourself, how do you soothe yourself?
Sometimes I'll just take a day off, and long walks are good, so that's good. But then sometimes I'll play video games for a day, almost like a day straight or something. It's not too common, but if you're really burned out, it's really easy. There's a lot of great games out there. My wife, she probably even likes video games more than I do. So we were playing one earlier today.
Is there an event in your life that has challenged you to the core?
So I didn't fit in the military well. So that would definitely be, if there was a singular event, that would be it, mm-hmm. being in the military.
Is there a principle or an idea that helped you through your challenges?
Luck. No, but I think you can, that applies for the military stuff. But like when working for yourself, one thing I did that was really good is, I actually lived like in a trailer park for a little while. So my living costs were like dirt low. So I could afford to invest most of what I earned into learning, growing their earnings faster, and so on and so forth. And that's a big deal because a lot of people, you know, go to college, get out, and they have like, you know, $30,000 or $50,000 of debt, and they kind of have to do whatever they have to do. Mm-hmm. Whereas by having basically no debt and living costs that were essentially nil, even if I was only making a couple hundred dollars a month off the start, it wasn't that bad because I had time to figure stuff out. And then I also was really cheap back then. Like I sat on a folding Walmart chair. It was like $8 for like 3 years or something before I upgraded it. So I would say those were definitely big helps. Also, you know, like more recently, of course, meeting my wife has been great. So, but that's been more recent. I think I was had more of the struggles before I met her. And then since I've met her, I haven't had as many of those sorts of struggles. So I guess it's almost like an ounce of prevention is a pound of cure or whatever.
If you were giving a commencement address for high school or college, giving your best advice, what would you say?
Avoid debt at all costs. That'd probably be the first one. And then I'm not sure. It's very hard. It's so broad that it you know how some artists like to have like a scratch in the paper when they start? Mm-hmm. So they can. I feel kind of weird about giving that broad of advice other than, you know, try to stay out of debt. Mm-hmm. I don't know really what to say because everyone's so different, you know?
Mm-hmm. My last question is to help you get better at this process. Is there a question I didn't ask that I should have, or something you wanted to say but haven't?
Not that I can think of. Oh, you didn't ask, how do you rank number one for... No, I'm checking.
Okay.
No, I was teasing about that because sometimes people do have absurd sites. Like sometimes they try to, hey, I just have a quick question. Can you, and they try to get the agreement up front. Then you say, sure. And then they're like, okay, this is my, you know, like chicken fighting site or it'd be something ridiculous like that. You know?
Yes. So. Do people often ask you advice of how to improve their rankings?
Yeah, I mean, that's what our membership site is mostly mm-hmm. about, as people discuss improving rankings and improving stability of rankings and trying to, you know, be able to grow their business, use search to grow their business. The tricky part with running a site in the SEO space is that the reason a lot of people are interested in SEO is because they think free traffic.
Mm.
And then when you sign up like for a hosting account or get your domain from a register, a lot of them are like SEO package, you know, $10, you know. So, and then you search, you know, Google for it, and then there's these ads all over it for AdWords, you know, SEO $12, you know. And so there's this perception that, well, it's free traffic and the stuff should be cheap or whatever. And then so a lot of people try to, you know, they want the rewards of hard work and large investment mm-hmm. while doing neither. And and that's, you kind of have to put up a bit of a defense shield on that stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's different levels of, dare I say, honesty when it comes to SEO.
Yeah, well, it's honesty, but then it's also experience. So like how I mentioned, the person that runs their own sites will know stuff in a way that a person who doesn't won't. There's that, and then like you said, honesty. Some people are there just to, you know, sell whatever someone's willing to buy,
mm-hmm.
even if it won't work.
Well, if you, for example, you put Google ads on your site,
mm-hmm.
and then you try to scam Google by making links from a whole bunch of other little sites and that would link to another sites, which would link to your site. And you build a whole network in order to create volume coming to your place so that you can make more money off of them. Aren't there some ethical issues that arise from that kind of thing?
You're in a gray area with that. It depends on like what someone's doing. So if people are creating stuff that they know is garbage, then that's not so good. But if what they, but there's two sides of the coin, and people always focus on the independent person and never really look at like the search engine. So to give like an absurd example, with in terms of like creating garbage content and trying to rank it and yada yada yada, eHow, it was like the known as a like a content farm. Mm-hmm. Have articles like how to pour a glass of water, and it's and there literally was a an article about that topic, and Google was funding that the whole time and still is. So it's kind of a weird area where sometimes individuals get highlighted as, and it's like, well, this person's a scumbag or this person did this, but there's always, it's always like the, it's like the yin and yang aspect of it. Like, the search engines also participate in this stuff as well. So it's like, for example, at one point, Google mentioned they got like, it was either 30,000 or 50,000. I think it was 50,000. 50,000 AdWords advertisers that were paying Google were selling counterfeit knockoff products or whatever. And Google, you know, highlights how they're like the good guy and police and how they just blocked all these 50,000 people or whatever. Well, the thing is, how did the problem get to the scale to where there were 50,000 advertisers selling fake goods? How did the scale get that large without getting fixed in the first place? that question is never asked. So that's what's so hard is that. And then the other aspect is the search engines not only like to grade the ecosystem, but they also like to participate in it. So like Google was like scraping reviews from Yelp and TripAdvisor and told them that, you know, if that you don't want us to scrape your content, block us, you know, from even ranking you anywhere. So there's a lot of adversarial stuff in there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not necessarily, it's the independent people who do, you know, stuff in the gray area or whatever often highlighted, but when the search companies themselves do like the kind of darkish, blackish gray stuff, it doesn't get the same level of play typically. It's very much, biased in that even like, for example, there's a site called Mahalo from Jason Calcanis. You said that, what was her name? Vanessa, you said earlier on the call?
Veronica Belmont.
Veronica, yeah, I had the wrong name on, wrong first name, so that's why I didn't remember. So Veronica Belmont, she used to do stuff for Mahalo, and she would do recap videos and stuff like this, and good lead sort of public relations sort of content, right? So what she did was good stuff. But then Mahalo was also doing like scraping tons of pages in the background from other sites and auto-generating pages off it. And then when that site was launched, the guy that launched it, Jason Calcanis, was like, oh, SEOs will have hell to pay, them damn spammers, we'll show them. But then Mahalo eventually became like kind of the sort of spam site that it allegedly aimed to stop, you know? So that's the tricky part is you try to do something, you hope it works well, but sometimes the numbers don't work and then people adjust the model. And a lot of the path to hell is paved with good intentions or whatever. A lot of that stuff is just incremental adjustments. And then the next thing you know, you have a site that's the opposite of what it claims to be, you know?
So when money gets involved, there's rules are a bit more adjustable.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, also, if you look at some of the topics, like Google has repeatedly bought paid links and stuff, and whenever they get caught doing it, it's like, oh, sorry, that was our freelancer, or oh, sorry, we meant this other thing, we didn't mean to get those. That's the thing. It's hard to participate in some of the. It's hard to participate in the ecosystem in some ways. Without being somewhere in the gray area because there's carryover stuff. Like going back to baseball cards, if you go to like Beckett.com, it's like a price guide for baseball cards. It's been the leading authority on baseball card price for like, 20, 30 years, long time, longer than I even collected cards for or whatever. So if you go to the footer of their site, there's a big ad, you know, we recommend Google Chrome and then direct links off to the Chrome page. Well, there's nothing that blocks the flow of link juice on that. So, according to Google, that would be black hat SEO. However, there's Google, you know, promoting their product. So,
well, it's okay when Google does it, huh?
Well, that's kind of home team advantage, I guess.
Mm-hmm. You read widely, I noticed, from your site.
Yeah, well, I read a lot about, like, economic stuff.
Mm-hmm. Pop psych and science and a little bit of everything.
Yeah. Mostly all that other stuff is through either marketing or economics or publishing. Those are, like, the interest vectors, and then they veer over to the other stuff.
So. Although I did read something about, what was it, Man's Search for Meaning, that impressed you.
Yeah, that was a good book. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So you also get into sort of the philosophical aspects of it.
Yep.
If you tie it all together, how does the marketing part, is it marketing advertising combination, is there a core value system or theory underlying your approach?
I don't know. I think you always have to be, that's part of the thing I would say. If you talk about SEO, it's like, there's white hat, there's black hat, there's gray hat or whatever. The more a person tells you that they're really white hat, generally speaking, the less they can be trusted. So by that very definition, I view everything as being somewhere in the gray. Or if the person says they're heavily in the white, then they're suspect. An example of that, Edward Bernays wrote the guide that founded the field of public relations. And he talked about, basically white hat public relations as part of it. And, they should always be ethical, be truthful, this, that, right? And then the same guy also created the Middle America Information Bureau, which was a fake news organization designed to pump propaganda into the minds of U.S. citizens so that U.S. would bomb Guatemala. So his United Fruit / Chiquita client would make more money. But he was self-proclaimed white hat.
If you're going to be self-proclaimed, you might as well proclaim yourself as white hat.
Yeah.
I am the good guy.
But, yeah, so there's actually a lot of interesting documentaries about how all that sort of stuff ties together. I like books that are about history that way, or documentaries like Adam Curtis has really good ones. I think he's got The Century of the Self. Oh, I think you'd like it if you're. It seems like it's aligned with a lot of the stuff you're into in terms of psychology and sociology and that sort of stuff. It's ties in with that, and then the rise of public relations, and it's pretty interesting.
I want to thank Aaron Wall for joining me today. Thanks, Aaron. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
If you'd like to leave a comment, ask a question, or get more info, go to whatsitlike.info.